Welcome to Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. Outbeat Radio is a program produced by, for, and about the Sonoma County GLBT community and airs every Sunday at 8 p.m. Visit us on the web anytime at outbeatradio.org. I'm Jeff Basham, and in studio tonight with me is my co-host, Greg Maraglia. You may have noted that we were scheduled to interview Sonoma County District Attorney-elect Jill Ravitch, but unfortunately, she declined at the last minute to be interviewed. Instead, tonight we have a special on Dan Savage's It Gets Better project, an interview with Dennis and Judy Shepherd, parents of Matthew Shepherd, and much more. Stay tuned for all that in a few minutes, right after the Outbeat Radio News, with Outbeat Radio host Greg Maraglia.
This is Greg Maraglia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, October 24th, 2010. According to Advocate News, several people throughout Uganda have reportedly been attacked after a newspaper published the names and pictures of 100 people alleged to be gay. Activist Frank Mugisha, who works with Sexual Minorities Uganda, said one woman was almost killed after neighbors threw stones at her house. He said most of the people whose names were printed in Rolling Stone magazine have been harassed. A Killing the Gays bill proposed by a member of parliament made headlines last year, but after international outcry a year later, it has yet to be formally debated. Homosexuality is still illegal in Uganda. And here in the States, Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum announced Friday that he will not be appealing last month's ruling by the state appellate court striking down a state law banning gay people from adopting. McCollum's announcement puts a final end to the law after 33 years on the books. Governor Charlie Crist and the Florida Department of Children and Families had already announced that they would not challenge the decision. This law, by baselessly branding gay people unfit parents, was one of the most notorious anti-gay laws in the country, and we're delighted that it's ended once and for all, said Leslie Cooper, a senior staff attorney with the ACLU LGBT Project, who argued the case before Florida's 3rd District Court of Appeal. This victory means that thousands of children in Florida who are waiting to be adopted will no longer be needlessly deprived of willing and able parents who can give them the love and support of a family. The fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell took some wild twists and turns this week. On Tuesday, federal judge Virginia Phillips denied the government's request for an emergency stay order disbanding the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Almost immediately, military recruiters were instructed to start accepting openly gay recruits. But then the next day, on Wednesday, the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals stayed Judge Virginia Phillips' injunction regarding the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, in effect reviving a law that bans openly gay, lesbian, and bisexual service members. The Obama administration has taken the position of defending Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the wake of the decision handed down last week by Judge Phillips. Lieutenant Dan Choi, one of the most outspoken former members of the military who was discharged for being gay, had this to say.
Yesterday, when President Obama, after Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been dead for a week, no enormous consequences, no people quitting the military because of honest soldiers, and all of a sudden you see this president want to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to discrimination and injustice. Valerie Jarrett said that gay people, some of us should try to understand the politics and the situation and that we are a nation of laws. Well, we understand that. We don't need a lecture from Valerie Jarrett on that. Civics, day one, American government, checks and balances. When Congress enacts a law that's unconstitutional, whose job is it to strike it down? The courts. I understand the judicial branch is now the only branch of government that is filling its mandate to the Constitution. And that the president is not able to do that upsets me. I'm resentful. You have lost my trust, and I'm not going to vote for Barack Obama after what he did yesterday.
And here in the Bay Area, two leaders of the nonprofit behind San Francisco's Gay Pride announced their resignations this week due to financial and operational complications clouding the organization. Executive Director Amy Andre and Board President Michaela Connell stepped down this week after it was found that 20 nonprofit groups hired to operate beverage booths at this year's event in June are owed a collective $46,000, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. Andre said the money will be repaid even as the organization must deal with a $99,000 operating debt. The lapse in payments were due to a misunderstanding in payment responsibilities for equipment like booths and portable bathrooms, the costs of which were absorbed by the smaller nonprofit organizations. According to the report, Connell told friends she was stepping down from her volunteer position as the financial fiasco forced her to take time away from her day job. City and county supervisors Devin Dufty and David Campos have both stepped in to help the organization recover. And that's your Outbeat Radio News Report. I'm Greg Morelia. Say it. Tell it like it is.
Justin Auberg. Billy Lucas. Cody Barker. Asher Brown. Seth Welsh. Raymond Chase. Tyler Clemente. Welcome back to Outbeat Now. I'm Jeff Basham. Many LGBT youth can't picture what their lives might be like as openly gay adults. They can't imagine a future for themselves. All the names I've just read are of American teenagers who in recent months have taken their own lives after being bullied in school. For too long, LGBT youth have been forced to struggle through their formative years suffering from bullies in their schools, churches, and homes, and with no support system to provide them any help. Noted writer and media pundit Dan Savage founded the It Gets Better Project in September as a unique way for supporters everywhere to tell LGBT youth that it gets better. Close-minded school administrators and parents may not let LGBT adults talk directly to their children about their futures, but we don't have to get permission to tell kids that life gets better. That's why he is compiling a video archive to share the stories of people overcoming bullying and finding happiness. ItGetsBetterProject.com is a place where young people who are gay, lesbian, bi, or trans can see with their own eyes how love and happiness can be a reality in their future. It's a place where LGBT adults can share the stories of their lives, and straight allies can add their names in solidarity and help spread our message of hope. We'd like to share a few of the ItGetsBetterProject.com videos with you tonight. First, Fort Worth City Councilman Joel Burns.
Mayor, as you know, we are gathered here today in our pink shirts to bring awareness to the fight against breast cancer here in Fort Worth and across the globe. But tonight I ask my colleagues' indulgence in allowing me to use my announcement time to talk briefly about another issue that pulls at my heart. The parents of Asher Brown, who you can see above, complained to school officials in the Cypress Fairbanks ISD outside of Houston that their son was being bullied and harassed in school. The bullies called him faggot and queer. They shoved him, they punched him, and in spite of his parents' calls to counselors and principals, the harassment, intimidation, and threats continued. For years, it continued. A couple of weeks ago, after being bullied at school, Asher went home, found his father's gun, and shot himself in the head. His father found Asher dead when he came home from work. Asher was 13 years old. Unlike Asher, Indiana teen Billy Lucas, who never self-identified as gay, but was perceived to be by bullies who harassed him daily at the Greenberg Community High School. 3 weeks ago, he hung himself in his grandparents' barn. He was 15 years old. Minnesota 15-year-old Justin Auberg came out to friends at age 13, after which the harassment and bullying began. It grew as he moved from middle school to high school. When he found the harassment more than he could bear, he hung himself in his room and was found by his mother. Classmates started teasing and name-calling Seth Walsh in the fourth grade. It continued through his middle school years, where other students told him the world didn't need another queer. and that he should, quote, go hang himself. On September 18th, after being threatened by a group of older teens, he went home, threw a noose around a tree branch, and he did just that. He hung himself in his backyard. His mother saw him, pulled him down. Seth survived on life support for 9 days before dying a couple of weeks ago. He was 13 years old. Teen bullying and suicide has reached an epidemic in our country, especially among gay and lesbian youth, those perceived to be gay, or kids who are just different. In recent weeks, New Jersey teen Tyler Clementi jumped off a bridge to his death after his roommate outed him on the internet. Rhode Island teen Raymond Chase hung himself in his dorm room. And we learned just yesterday of Oklahoma teen Zach Harrington, who killed himself after attending a city council meeting in Norman, Oklahoma, where speakers made disparaging anti-gay remarks. There is a conversation for the adults in this room and those watching to have, and we will have it, that this bullying and harassment in our schools must stop and that our schools must be a safe place to learn and to grow. It is never acceptable for us to be the cause of any child to feel unloved or worthless, and I am committed to being a part of that conversation. But tonight, I would like to talk to the 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds at Pascal and at Arlington Heights and at Trimble Tech High Schools or at Daggett and Rosemont Middle Schools or any school in Fort Worth or anywhere across the country for that matter. I know that life can seem unbearable. I know that the people in your household or in your school may not understand you and that they may even physically harm you. But I want you to know that it gets better. When I was 13, I was a skinny, lanky, awkward teen who had grown too tall too fast, who would stumble over my own feet. I was the son of a Methodist church pianist named Jeanette and a cowboy named, fittingly, Butch in Crowley, Texas. As their son and as a kid in a small town, there was a certain image of who I thought I was supposed to be. But as I entered adolescence, I started having feelings that I didn't understand and couldn't explain, but I knew they didn't mesh with the image of what I thought I was supposed to be. I was a sensitive kid, but friendly. I was a band dork. I played basketball, but not very well. I was teased like all kids, but I was fairly confident, and I didn't let it bother me much. One day when I was in the ninth grade, just starting Crowley High School, I was cornered after school by some older kids who roughed me up. They said that I was a faggot and that I should die and go to hell where I belonged. That erupted the fear that I had kept pushed down, that what I was beginning to feel on the inside must somehow be showing on the outside. Ashamed, humiliated, and confused, I went home. There must be something very wrong with me, I thought, something I could never let my family or anyone else know. I think I'm going to have too hard a time with the next couple of sentences that I wrote. And also, I don't want my mother and father to bear the pain of having hear me say them. So I will just say, and I'll skip ahead, I have never told this story to anyone before tonight. Not my family, not my husband, not anyone. But the numerous suicides in recent days have upset me so much and have just torn at my heart. And even though there may be some political repercussions for telling my story, this story is not just for the adults who might choose or not choose to support me. This story is for the young people who might be holding that gun tonight, or the rope, or the pill bottle. You need to know that the story doesn't end where I didn't tell it on that unfortunate day. There is so, so, so much more. Yes, high school was difficult. Coming out was painful. But life got so much better for me. And I want to tell any teen who might see this, give yourself a chance to see just how much life, how much better life will get. And it will get better. You will get out of the household that doesn't accept you. You will get out of that high school, and you never have to deal with those jerks again if you don't want to. You will find and you will make new friends who will understand you, and life will get so, so, so much better. I look back and my life is full of so many happy memories that I wish I could share with those whose photos were shown up above earlier and those who have taken their lives. Memories that I wish I could share with the 13-year-old version of me on that very unfortunate day. If I could, I would take the 13-year-old me by the hand and take him to the campaign office in 1992 of then-Governor Clinton, where for a very speechless moment, my now partner J.D. Engel and I saw each other for the first time. I would take that 13-year-old me to the first day of spring in 1999 on a West Texas ranch hilltop surrounded by a dozen head of black Angus cattle who thought we were there to feed. And as the sun set, turning the sky pink and purple and orange in a way that only a West Texas sunset can, I jabbed my hands into my jeans pocket and pulled out two rings that I'd literally spent my last dollar on and slipped one onto JD's hand and asked him to spend the rest of his life with me. I would take the 13-year-old Joel to election night in 2007 in a room filled with countless family and friends, erupting in cheers when it became clear that I would win my first election, so that they could see the love and support for me that was in the room that night. And I would take the 13-year-old me to just a few days ago at Baylor Hospital to see our dad. Our dad, who's no longer the 40-year-old tough cowboy that he was when I was 13, who I thought would never understand me, but is now the 67-year-old dad, still pretty tough cowboy, who has grown older. And the 13-year-old me would see me today holding my dad's weathered hand and see my dad as he woke up from his operation and him squeeze my hand and look up at me and say, Joel, I'm so glad you're here today. And me say back to my dad, I am too, Daddy. I am too. To those who are feeling very alone tonight, please know that I understand how you feel, that things will get easier. Please stick around to make those happy memories for yourself. It may not seem like it tonight, but they will. And the attitudes of society will change. Please live long enough to be there to see it. And to the adults, the bullying and the harassment has to stop. We cannot look aside as life after life is tragically lost. If you need resources, please check out the trevorproject.org online, and you can call me and I will get you whatever resources you need. I want to thank those in this room for allowing me this time. And to JD and the rest of my family, I'm sorry for you learning of this painful personal story in this public way for the first time. But know that I am able to tell it because of your love for me. And Mom and Dad, I'm alive today because you love me. Again, attitudes will change. Life will get better. And you will have a lifetime of happy memories if you just allow yourself and give yourself the time to make them. Thank you.
Hey, friend, when you feel like you're alone and the world throws out a lot of hate,
it's not the end. You're not out there on your own. There's still so much in life to celebrate. Just look up.
The song you've just heard, It Gets Better, was written by Jay Kuo and was performed by many of the talented singers currently performing on Broadway. It's a song available on iTunes that benefits The Trevor Project.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
Like millions of Americans, I was terribly saddened to learn of the recent suicides of several teenagers across our country after being bullied because they were gay or because people thought they were gay. Children are particularly vulnerable to the hurt caused by discrimination and prejudice, and we've lost many young people over the years to suicide. These most recent deaths are a reminder that all Americans have to work harder to overcome bigotry and hatred. I have a message for all the young people out there who are being bullied or who feel alone and find it hard to imagine a better future. First of all, hang in there. And ask for help. Your life is so important to your family, your friends, and to your country. And there's so much waiting for you, both personally and professionally. There's so many opportunities for you to develop your talents and make your contributions. And these opportunities will increase because the story of America is the story of people coming together to tear down barriers, stand up for rights, and insist on equality, not only for themselves, but for all people. And in the process, they create a community of support and solidarity that endures. Just think of the progress made by women just during my lifetime, or ethnic, racial, and religious minorities over the course of our history, and by gays and lesbians, many of whom are now free to live their lives openly and proudly. Here at the State Department, I'm grateful every day for the work of our LGBT employees who are serving the United States as foreign service officers and civil servants here and around the world. It wasn't long ago that these men and women would not have been able to serve openly, but today they can, because it has gotten better, and it will get better for you. So take heart and have hope, and please remember that your life is valuable and that you are not alone. Many people are standing with you and sending you their thoughts, their prayers, and their strength. Count me among them. Take care of yourself.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to KRCB Santa Rosa. This is Outbeat Now. The message you just heard was from Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton from ItGetsBetterProject.com. A place where young people who are gay, lesbian, bi, or trans can see with their own eyes how love and happiness can be a reality in their future. Our next message comes from the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Like all of you, I was shocked and saddened by the deaths of several young people who were bullied and taunted for being gay, and who ultimately took their own lives. As a parent of two daughters, it breaks my heart. It's something that just shouldn't happen in this country. And we've got to dispel this myth that bullying is just a normal rite of passage, that it's some inevitable part of growing up. It's not. We have an obligation to ensure that our schools are safe for all of our kids. And to every young person out there, you need to know that if you're in trouble, there are caring adults who can help. I don't know what it's like to be picked on for being gay, but I do know what it's like to grow up feeling that sometimes you don't belong. It's tough. And for a lot of kids, the sense of being alone or apart, I know it can just wear on you. And when you're teased or bullied, it can seem like somehow you brought it on yourself for being different or for not fitting in with everybody else. But what I want to say is this: you are not alone. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything to deserve being bullied. And there is a whole world waiting for you, filled with possibilities. There are people out there who love you and care about you just the way you are. And so, if you ever feel like, because of bullying, because of what people are saying, that you're getting down on yourself, you've got to make sure to reach out to people you trust, whether it's your parents, teachers, folks that you know care about you just the way you are. You've got to reach out to them. Don't feel like you're in this by yourself. The other thing you need to know is things will get better. And more than that, with time, you're going to see that your differences are a source of pride and a source of strength. You'll look back on the struggles you faced with compassion and wisdom, and that's not just going to serve you, but it'll help you get involved and make this country a better place. It'll mean that you'll be more likely to help fight discrimination, not just against LGBT Americans, but discrimination in all its forms. It means you'll be more likely to understand personally and deeply why it's so important that as adults we set an example in our own lives and that we treat everybody with respect, that we are able to see the world through other people's eyes and stand in their shoes, that we never lose sight of what binds us together. As a nation, we're founded on the belief that all of us are equal and each of us deserves the freedom to pursue our own version of happiness, to make the most of our talents, to speak our minds, to not fit in, most of all, to be true to ourselves. That's the freedom that enriches all of us. That's what America's all about. And every day, it gets better.
Thanks, Jeff. Coming up in the second half of the hour, we'll have this month's Outbeat Youth segment with special guests Judy and Dennis Shepherd. But first, a quick music break. Now, this is a special song written by singer-songwriter Randy Driscoll. Randy wrote What Matters in 1998 after hearing about the murder of Matthew Shepherd. Now, in light of the recent youth suicides we've talked about tonight, I believe her words have just as much meaning today as they did 12 years ago.
You were the brightest angel heaven had ever seen. You walked in with a story to tell, 10,000 tongues to scream. And you said, doesn't your heart beat the same as mine? Haven't I told you 1,000 times? Isn't the air in my lungs the same air you breathe? So who cares whose arms are more wrapped up?
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care. Serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. On the web at afamd.com.
I am lost. What a price my love did cost. And here I am standing strong. And
that was Randy Driscoll with her original song, What Matters. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM, Santa Rosa. It's time now for this month's edition of Outbeat Youth.
peace, put my soul, I feel love, I am so, so alive.
Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a program for and about LGBT youth right here in the North Bay Area. This segment airs every month on the fourth Sunday as part of Outbeat Now, right here on KRCB Radio. Before I introduce tonight's guests, let me tell you about our Youth Talent Show that will air next May. We're looking for members of the LGBT youth community 12 to 25 years of age to share their original poetry, short stories, music, or essays right here on the radio. That's right, if you're a songwriter, musician, poet, or writer, we want to feature your voice right here on the air. Now you can record your work and send it to us ahead of time, or we'll record it for you. You can even join us live that night on the show and perform live. We welcome soloists and groups. Now this is not a competition, and we welcome everybody. It's just an opportunity for you to share your talent with the world. All you need to do to get involved is to sign up. So go to our website at outbeatyouth.com and click on Talent Show at the top of the page. This month we're celebrating being on the air 1 year here on KRCB, and I'm thrilled to have with us on this very special night my good friends Judy and Dennis Shepherd. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's hard to believe that it's been 12 years since your son Matthew was murdered in what's become known as one of the most infamous and vicious hate crimes of our time. And there's so much information out there about what happened to Matt, but so little about who he was as a person. Can you give us a sense of who he was?
Well, he was a young man who loved the theater, loved drama, debate, loved people, a good joke, a good laugh, movies, books, politics, loved to debate, you know, everything. Really fun, really smart, and really cared about other people.
Dennis, tell us about your memories of Matthew.
He did like people. He was pretty frustrated in that he wasn't that athletic. And I think it was kind of tough on him because I was pretty athletic. So he was interested in sports where you didn't have to worry about people depending on him. He did individual sports like running and swimming instead of team sports. But he was a good kid, and he was athletic. And I've talked about that a lot of times when I do speak about his work with the theater, because you have to be a hell of an athlete to work backstage, learn all your lines, and do all your homework at the same time when you're in school. So he was an athlete. He just didn't realize it.
Sure. Well, over the last 12 years, several movies have been made and a couple of books written about what happened to Matthew back in October of 1998 in Laramie, Wyoming. And in fact, it was through the documentary MTV produced in 2000 that I first met you two. There was also the NBC movie that tried to tell more about Matt's life. But give us a sense of how accurate these movies really are.
Well, the MTV version was strictly public record and the least of my favorites. There was a movie that NBC did that was a good movie, but really wasn't specific to Matt. Laramie Project is by far the most honest and always will be honest depiction of what happened. Even though it's not about Matt, it's about Laramie, but it's still the most truthful, honest, real story of what happened, and it's really the best.
Oh, the Laramie Project was just amazing. And for our listeners that may not be familiar with this piece, the Laramie Project is a play produced by the Tectonic Theater Project after members of the theater group traveled to Laramie, Wyoming and interviewed people in the town at the time following Matt's murder. And in fact, 2 years ago, they went back to Laramie and have since produced an epilogue that they performed in San Francisco last night. What are your thoughts about this second piece?
You know, it was a really honest and successful attempt by Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic Theater Group to deal with the revisionist history that still hangs on about Matt. And it was I thought it was really well done. I didn't think it was as emotional as the original play, but I thought it was really, really well done and a very worthwhile project.
Well, Judy, you also wrote a book that was published last year called The Meaning of Matthew. Tell us what motivated you to write the book and what was the experience like for you?
Well, I wrote the book because as a family, we felt that Matt had become this icon that wasn't really Matt anymore. It was Matthew Shepard, but not really Matt. And I wanted people to meet our Matt, not just know him from other people's stories or what they think he should have been or what he was or any of those things that weren't really, you know, 100% real. And the experience was really hard, but it also allowed us to talk about memories and remember Matt in a way that was, again, more real, things that annoyed us about him, rather than just the things that we love. So he became, at least for me anyway, more real.
And so what's the public's reaction been? What kind of feedback have you received on the book?
Well, the feedback has been great. I think a lot of people can identify with Matt's story one way or another, and our story as a family in dealing with hate and hate crime and prejudice and discrimination, just loving your kids for who they are. It's been a really nice reception.
Oh, that's so great to hear. Well, you mentioned hate crimes, and it was a year ago this month that President Obama signed into law the Matthew Shepard James Byrd Jr. Act we spoke about earlier on the show that expanded the definition of a hate crime to include sexual orientation, gender identity, and disabilities. Dennis, let me ask you, what's the impact of this law been so far?
Well, it's just starting now because they're training all the law enforcement and the attorneys on the law. And I think as they get trained and they start reporting this more and more and that the general public finds out there is a law that will force them to either obey the law or go to jail, that you're going to see hate crimes be reported more and you'll see fewer hate crimes.
And you've been involved in doing some training with law enforcement. Tell us a little bit about that.
I've been working with the FBI. They've been going around first to the five states that have no hate crime laws at all: South Carolina, Georgia, Arkansas, Indiana, and, of course, our own special state, Wyoming. They're training the district attorneys, FBI agents, local law enforcement, sheriff's departments, police departments, campus police, and NGOs, the non-government organizations, on what the law is and how it pertains to them, so they know how to effectively use the law for their benefit and to protect the community at large.
And you both had a chance to actually go and watch the president sign the law. How did that feel for you, Judy?
No, it was really amazing. You hold your breath until the very last minute. We've been so close so many times. But to be invited to be a part of it and to get a pen that was part of the signature and sort of ironically have it attached to the Department of Defense bill was really special. And the president was so gracious. Everybody was very gracious to us that day.
Well, I've often said that laws and policies don't actually prevent, you know, hate crimes from happening, and that they don't have any impact on changing the hearts and minds of people. Judy, I've heard you say so many times that the only way to change hearts and minds is for people to come out and to share their stories. And, of course, earlier this month, we celebrated National Coming Out Day. So tell us from your perspective about the importance of coming out.
Well, things don't change unless it becomes personal. You have to identify with your peers, your family, your coworkers, and friends and tell them your story so they know what your situation is. Sharing that and making it real to them to know that someone they love is facing this kind of discrimination and these sort of social justice problems really makes it real and encourages people to become advocates for the issue. So it's critical that people tell their stories.
And how did Matt come out to you?
Well, he was 18, a freshman in college. I was living in Saudi Arabia, and he called in the middle of the night and said, Mom, there's something I need to share with you about me. And I said, Matt, what would that be? And he said, I am gay. And I said, what took you so long to tell me? A lot of people say, well, why didn't you just ask him? Well, because I know Matt. If I had approached him first, he would have retreated. He was going to come out when he was good and ready and not before. I'm not even sure he, up until the time he told me, was ready to be whoever he was going to be. So it was, you know, it's always an adjustment, no matter how well prepared you think you are, because you're now on a road less traveled. But actually in hindsight, might have made it a little too easy for him, because he'd created this drama about what it was going to be like. And I think he might have felt that we dismissed his drama by just being totally accepting. I'm not saying we should have challenged him in any way, but maybe we weren't respectful enough of his own fears. I'm not sure. But, it was fine. Nobody, to our knowledge, in family or friends, rejected Matt once he came out, which is always a question on people's minds. But I know it's getting better.
Yeah, I think you're right. We have come a long way. And in some cases, it is easier to come out. Dennis, how did Matt tell you?
He told me one night in Minnesota, and he said, "I have something to tell you." And I said, "Sure, what is it?" He said, "Well, I just want to let you know I'm gay." I said, "Okay, but what's the important thing you want to tell me?" And he kind of looked at me in shock, and he said, "That was it." And I said, "That's no big deal. You're still Matt, and we still love you." And that was the important thing.
Wow, Dennis. I mean, it's just such a shame that every parent doesn't have that same reaction, the same reaction of love that you did. I was lucky. My dad reacted in much the same way. I think it's true about what I've heard that when children come out afterwards, the parents need to come out. Judy and Dennis, what advice do you have for parents?
It's just really important to be honest. You have to be honest and completely confident in yourself before it's comfortable to you. And it's really important that it is comfortable to you. So my suggestion is figure out a way to make it comfortable to you. Join PFLAG. Talk to other parents who are involved in the situation. Talk it over with your children. They are now the teachers. They've gone through this. They know what to expect. But as a parent, you do have to come out to your own family and friends. If you think it's hard, just think how hard it is for your kids, to go through that. But it is really, really important. And you need to put pictures out of your kids who are gay with their partners or their boyfriends or girlfriends, just as you do with your straight kids. It's just balance and equality and thinking about these are your kids no matter what.
Well, I know when I came out, my greatest fear was telling my dad. I was definitely afraid of how he was going to react. And as I mentioned earlier, he was very loving and very, very accepting. Dennis, speak to the fathers out there. What advice can you give them?
Well, first of all, they're still your kids. And if you loved them 5 seconds before they told you that they're gay, you should still love them 5 seconds after. I mean, I can't understand how you can suddenly reject a young lady or a young man who suddenly says, "I'm a little different," because everybody's a little different. I don't care if they're straight or gay. They're different from everybody else. And it just frustrates me that they're not accepting. I was pretty upset when I first heard, because I wanted grandkids. I want to take them hunting and fishing and teach them like my father taught Matt and Logan. And then I got to thinking, well, how lucky can you be? You still have a son. He could have been in a war and been killed, been in an auto accident, been killed, but you still have your son. You still have the memories that you can make with him, for him and for you, and he can still have a family. So the idea that this is the end of the world is not the case, and people need to realize that. To follow up on what you asked Judy about, what do you do for parents who have to come out themselves? First of all, you have to be proud of your kids. After that, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it seems so simple, doesn't it? Well, the two of you have certainly traveled around the country quite a bit over the years, and you've talked to many young people who are out and then a lot of kids who aren't out yet. What advice do you have for our young people listening tonight who are not out yet about coming out?
Make sure you're ready. I personally think it's a mistake to do it before you're actually confident in who you are. You may be thinking that you're ready and this is who you are, but until you really feel like this is it, this is really and truly it, and you're confident about that and you can talk about it with great pride and confidence and not fear, that's good, because if you talk about it with some degree of shame or fear, that's what people are going to take away from the conversation, your shame and your fear. Start out with a focus group, your best friend or your sibling, but perhaps the most important thing is to be always aware of your surroundings. Always, always be aware of your surroundings. This is still a safety issue for young kids and, well, for all members of the gay community, well, for the world in general. So just be careful, be aware, and be yourself.
Well, I know you've told me many times that, mothers always know. If you're a parent and you think your child might be gay, what advice would you give them? Should they approach their child or wait for the child to come out?
You know, it works with different kids. You just have to know who your kids are. I knew it wouldn't work for Matt, but I've talked to a lot of young people who tell me they've left copies of The Advocate all over the house, and all mom does is put it back in their bedroom with no questions. And they're wanting her to start the conversation, or their dad or their brother or somebody else. You just have to know your kid. And they'll tell you when they're ready and, you know, leave clues or something. So the important thing is, if it's not happening, maybe you need to ask yourself why it's not happening. Do they, for some reason, think you aren't going to be accepting? Have you made sure your life is inclusive, and do you use language that makes them understand that it's okay with you? Or are you a joke teller and a, you know, hate language user? You have to be conscious as a parent, too.
Well, sure. That makes sense. You've got to set the stage, in other words, for that conversation to occur, and so that your young person feels comfortable. Well, you know, we're really fortunate here in Sonoma County to have two really great LGBT youth organizations that young people can reach out to for support. And as you've traveled around the country and looked at other places and schools, what's your sense about how safe schools are, you know, outside of California?
Well, I think it's better. I think it's much better, and particularly since young people are coming out at a younger age. Public school systems and private schools as well have had to figure out a way to deal with it now. Used to be you after college you came out, not in middle school. Now things are very, very different. Is it safe everywhere? No. Is it unsafe everywhere? No. But even in the same district, it can be a totally different story. Y'all just have to pick your fights, pick your what you're going to do, who your friends are going to be, and just always be conscious of your surroundings. But it is better now, and it's still getting better.
Well, right. You know, with the advent of gay-straight alliances now, looking back 10 years ago, there weren't near the number of gay-straight alliances that we now see in high schools and even now in middle schools.
Right. I wish they would start, you know, even younger, because when the first social interaction starts between young people in preschool, what they see are differences, and they need to understand that differences are a good thing, not something to be afraid of. It's what makes our culture rich.
Exactly. Well, I've had the honor of working with both of you now for the last 10 years in the foundation that you created after Matt's death, the Matthew Shepard Foundation. Dennis, tell us how the foundation came about and a little bit about the work that the foundation is doing now.
The foundation was originally brought into existence as a result of the money that we'd received from people all over the world. $5, $10, $100 to help pay for Matt's expenses, his medical expenses in the hospital. And we thought that was a improper thing to do because he was our son. That was our financial responsibility and family responsibility. So we thought the important thing to do was to use that money in a way that would benefit everybody. So with that idea in mind, we took the money and we started a nonprofit foundation in Matt's name to help started off originally to help just the gay community, but it's really expanded. It's more anti-bullying and acceptance for differences, whether you're bullied or not. I mean, you have tall kids, short kids, kids with brown eyes, blue eyes, fat, skinny, it doesn't matter. The idea is everybody's different, and that creates the rich culture that we have, and everybody has a different viewpoint, and use that viewpoint to make life better for everybody.
Judy, what are you most proud of in terms of the work the foundation has done?
I think just being here. The fact that we've managed to be a name and a force of change is really pretty dramatic for a memorial foundation. But people have identified with Matt's story and Matt's name and tried to incorporate, you know, it's kind of a cautionary tale. We do this because we don't want there to be any more Matt Shepherds, but we also don't want there to be any more two young men who murdered Matt. We just feel education, raising awareness and talking about it, keeping a dialogue going, making other people aware that this is an issue that if we don't address, could get much worse.
Well, I know one of the accomplishments you've got to be most proud of is something that happened just this month, and that's the launch of the brand new Matthew's Place on the website. Tell us about that.
You know, it's going to be fabulous. Up until now, we've not been able to do anything interactive or in computer lingo dynamic, but I think it's just going to be amazing. And what we want to do is provide resources. We are in no way capable of being a direct service provider, but we sure can provide resources, discussion, chat rooms, ways to upload information, all kinds of new things that that young people really, really respond to. And it's actually geared toward probably 12 to 20 kids who have questions and issues and things they can look up about what their life could be and ways to help their lives as it is now.
So it's really an ideal place to go if you're a young person and you feel like you're all alone, you're not sure about coming out, you're not sure about who you are, and you just want good information from a safe place. This is really the website to go to.
That's absolutely right. And we're also concentrating on, we get so many questions from allies, from straight kids who just want to help their friends be safe or be happy or whatever. There's going to be a component there for ally kids to know how to help their friends.
Well, it truly is a wonderful resource. And if you're a young person out there and want to check out this website, go to www.matthewsplace.com. Judy and Dennis, congratulations on doing some amazing work with the Matthew Shepard Foundation. And most of all, thank you both so much for being with us on our one-year anniversary show here on Outbeat Youth.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. But before we go, I want to say again, if you're a young person out there who is struggling, please know that you're not alone. If you ever find yourself in a place where you're thinking about hurting yourself, please stop and make one phone call to the Trevor Project. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and ready to help. The number is 1-866-4-U-TREVOR. And remember, it does get better. Be sure to follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, or Twitter. And you'll find the links to all of these sites, as well as the link to iTunes, where you can download previous shows on our website at outbeatyouth.com. Thanks for listening. Well, Jeff, as we wrap up yet another show, I guess I should wish you happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Well, I guess that is right. It's been 1 year since we together took the airwaves here at KRCB in October of last year and introduced our very first segment of Outbeat Now. Kind of amazing to think that we've done this 12 times.
I know, and it's gone by so fast. I was looking on our Facebook link today, and we have over 1,650 fans following Outbeat Youth.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's great.
Really, really fantastic.
And we have, I think we have 150 or so on the Outbeat Now page,
and too. And that's a brand new site. Tell us about that.
Outbeat Now is on, well, outbeatradio.org, I should say. www.outbeatradio.org is a brand new website in which all shows that are here on Outbeat Radio, every single Sunday show, Sunday at 8 o'clock show, has their own page, has their own blog, and we post all the shows there too. And along with that, we have also launched our iTunes feed. So if you go onto iTunes, you can type in on the podcast page of iTunes, you can type in Outbeat Radio, and you can listen to all of our shows going way back, I think almost all the way back to January. So they're all available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can get your Outbeat Radio fits whenever you need it.
Outstanding. Very good.
So join us next Sunday night here on Outbeat Radio on Halloween for a very special edition of Outbeat Extra. If you missed our Outbeat Radio National Coming Out Day show on October 11th, you can hear it again at 8 p.m. next Sunday night. And again, visit us on the web at outbeatradio.org. Thanks for listening.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.